It's a very good afternoon. It is Niall Boylan, which you're right to at 1 o'clock. We've a lot to get through today, including, by the way, I do want to talk about the People Before Profit Bill, which was defeated. The government were defeated, should I say, last night. And they were defeated drastically. 74 votes to 61 to amend Ireland's abortion laws. I want to get your thoughts on that, of course. To amend the laws means taking away the three-day waiting period. And it also means as well that it could mean abortion up to what they call fetal viability. There is no real definition of that. It may also take the criminalisation away from doctors. Doctors who decide, by the way, to perform a termination of pregnancy outside the realms of the legislation. So really and truly, it looks like a bit of a free-for-all in some people's minds. But pro-choice say it's not. Pro-life say it is. We will be talking to pro-life a little bit later on, but I want to get your thoughts. The number is 085 122 55. That's 085 122 55. Now, the first thing I want to get to is direct provision. There has been numerous calls for to change the direct provision system. In other words, the direct provision system that we currently have at the moment is just unworkable. We see constantly all the time people on the streets in tents and in bad conditions. So joining me to talk about it is John McGurk, the journalist, and also Owen Chance, who's the chairperson of the ATPI Abolish Direct Provision campaign. You're both very welcome, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you very much, Niall.
Thanks, Niall.
Let's first of all, Owen, I want to go to you. In relation to the conditions people are living in, I can remember going back 5 or 6 years ago and we were all in a panic. We were talking in the media about 5 or 6,000 people in direct provision. Initially, at the very start, when direct provision started back in the early part of 2000, it was meant as a temporary measure to deal with the problem that we had and the influx of people into Ireland. For the first time, really, we had that influx of people into Ireland. Now we have a system that's fallen apart at the seams. We've over 20,000 people in direct provision, and that's not including the amount of Ukrainian people who are now fleeing war here in Ireland. So altogether, nearly 100,000 people looking for somewhere to live. Most don't have anywhere to live. It's temporary accommodation or bad conditions. But from the people that you've spoken to, what sort of conditions are they living in?
Okay, so basically the current situation of direct provision. So our campaign is about 5 years, I'd say 6 years old, and we have not seen this sort of, what must I say, inhumane conditions in which the government is allowing asylum seekers to be welcome to Ireland in, especially those in the international protection system. And you, if you look at the City West, for example, recently we've seen some photos of families sleeping on the floor, you know, asylum seekers being assaulted in City West and this kind of stuff. So in terms of our position is that the system currently is not fit for purpose and the government needs to end it or abolish it and develop a system that was outlined in the white paper by Minister Roger O'Gorman at the interception.
What was outlined by Roger O'Gorman was promised for 2023. This was the front door key by 6 weeks and all that kind of stuff. That's not going to happen, Owen. And you can clearly see in the crisis we're currently in now, which has been exacerbated, of course, by the people coming from Ukraine, that's not going to happen. And if it's if it does happen, it's an absolute miracle because I don't know where they're going to get the accommodation for. Currently, at the moment in Ireland, 40% of hotel rooms are taken up with refugees from different parts of the world. So I think you'll accept that's not going to happen in 2023 as promised.
Yeah, well, we already announced on our social media to our supporters that it's not possible because the white paper did say that by now we should have six reception centers. And we don't have reception centers because basically the Green Party went the way of using hotels and not building on public lands. You know, so we don't think direct provision can end overnight. There must be a process. It's a long process to end in this appalling system. But it must begin with a proper reception system. Now, we don't have a proper reception system. We have people sleeping in tents. We don't have cases being processed in a timely manner. Because when direct provision was created in 1999, all cases should be processed within 6 months. And they're not being processed. There are people 2 years in direct provision and their case is not being processed.
I mean, let me go to John. John, no matter what side of the argument you happen to come from, the idea of people sleeping in tents or in bad conditions, no matter where they happen to come from, whether you believe they're bogus, whether you believe they're genuine refugees, whether you believe their case is genuine, it's unacceptable to treat people like that. You know, somebody who comes into the country could be genuine and say, here's 25 quid in a tent.
We are treating people absolutely appallingly. I mean, it might surprise some of your listeners to hear me agreeing with Owen. I don't agree with them on everything. I'm sure we'll come to the disagreement. But I'll give you a couple of examples. In East Wall, before Christmas, there were protests, as your listeners will know, about the asylum centre there, the accommodation centre, that's a disused ESB building. My colleague, Fatima Gunning, actually went into that building. She spoke to residents in it. So there you have people living in cubicles that don't reach the ceilings. You have communal showers with 16 and 15-year-old girls living with older men, which, and I'm not implying at all any malfeasance on behalf of those older men, but it's not the kind of comfortable situation most 16 or 15 no, it or 16
doesn't provide privacy or dignity. Yeah, okay.
In Clare this week, in Inch, we see people being forced into a centre that's a disused hotel where we're told that up to 6 people will be accommodated per room on bunk beds. Nobody listening to this programme would want to live in those conditions. So I agree entirely that the conditions inside direct provision centres are inhumane, that it's unacceptable, and we shouldn't be doing it. However, where I diverge from Owen is he's talking about, I heard him mention there, I think, purpose-built accommodation on public lands. That's just not a viable option for a number of reasons. Number one, the government is already spending a couple of billion having builders and fitters retrofit existing homes for electricity. It's spending another billion rebuilding mica homes in Donegal. It's spending another 5 or 6 billion building 20,000 affordable homes a year for the next few years. We don't, apart from anything else, we don't have the builders, plumbers, and bricklayers to accomplish that. So that's just not a feasible.
The other point he made is in relation to the system itself. You know, people in direct provision for 8 to 12 years in some cases. We should have a system whereby many other countries have a system whereby when you come to Ireland, you apply for asylum, you go through a system, and within a reasonable amount of time, you are assessed and your case is assessed, mm-hmm. and you're not hanging around waiting for it.
And what's more, this is something where there should be agreement on all sides, but I suspect there isn't. If your case has been rejected, you should be processed and sent back to where you came from. We have a report on our website this morning that says 15% of deportation orders over the last 5 years have actually been enforced. We learned this week in I think it was the Irish Times, that when somebody's case is actually processed, which can take years after all the appeals, in I think 15% of cases where there's been a rejection, people are allowed to stay anyway on humanitarian grounds. So that isn't actually a rejection. You're getting to stay in the country even though your asylum application has been rejected. And all of those people are taking up space, often in direct provision and in accommodation centres, for people who may be legitimate refugees whose case hasn't been processed yet, who are in turn sleeping on the street. So the system is not working. I hope we would all agree that there is a process and a law which is respected, which is you come to the country, you make your asylum application. If it's accepted, well done, you know, congratulations, it should be accepted, and then there should be a path and you're moved on into society and given the opportunity to work and earn a living and build a life and all the rest of it. But if it's rejected, you shouldn't still be here.
Okay, we have loads of people
who are still here who shouldn't be here because they've had deportation orders that no one is forced to get.
Well, I've been informed that deportation orders are voluntary. In other words, you're handed a deportation order and you're kind of told, would you like to leave?
Niall, I think you need to rephrase that. Deportation orders are not voluntary. What we are doing, though, is allowing people to decide themselves whether they're enforced. If you have a deportation order, you are legally no longer welcome in the country.
Well, did I not hear it mentioned in the Oireachtas during the week when they were asked in the Oireachtas during the week how many people were deported? They said it was a voluntary system. They didn't really have the numbers, but they said, I think it was 135 or something last year, whatever it happened to be, whatever the figure was, don't quote me.
But the fact that it's a voluntary system is a disgrace is the point.
Well, it is. But the deportation order isn't voluntary.
It's just the state is allowing people to decide whether the law applies to them.
Okay. In relation to what John is saying, so he's agreeing with you. We're all agreeing the system is broken. And we're all agreeing the conditions are inhumane. You can see the conditions, actually. We have a video there, and you can see the conditions in them, which are appalling. And as John points out, people who are not genuine, who are coming from a country that is a safe country, where their lives are not in danger, are taking the place of people who genuinely need assistance and support and help. And they should be deported, as they would be in most countries in the world. Is that a fair suggestion, Owen?
Okay, so first of all, according to the Geneva Convention, we can't use terms like genuine or legitimate refugees. Basically, a person's asylum is accepted or is not accepted. When is unaccepted in terms of what John is saying about deportation, what the Department of Justice normally do is they send a letter saying that their application is rejected and you should be deported. Okay, the person can leave the country, but most times the person don't leave the country. And it's up to Garda or the Department of Justice to enforce that. If they fail to enforce that, then the person is not in wrong. So because direct provision was supposed to basically be for 6 months, if you're in the country for 12 years, you can apply for the minister discretion. And in most cases, the minister accepts if the person don't have a criminal record. In terms of our campaign, we support deportation only if a person commits a crime. But if someone is incarcerated in direct provision more than 6 months than it was intended to be, that
Okay,
person
but okay,
should
but
be
let,
given.
well, hang on. Let me interject there just for a second. So you support deportation, but only if a person commits a crime. But do you not
Exactly.
support? But do you not support deportation if a person is not? And I know you don't like the term legitimate, but I mean, in my view, you're either a legitimate asylum seeker and you fit the criteria according to the convention, or you don't. In other words, you're an economic migrant. And you know, Ireland, of course, is a small country geographically with a small economy. It's a good economy, thankfully, but it's a small economy. We cannot be the answer to the problems of the world where other countries have economic problems. So, as much as we would love to help everybody have a better life, that can't be the case because we're firstly in the middle of an accommodation crisis and a housing crisis, so we don't have the accommodation. So, realistically, if you're not genuine, if you don't fit the criteria as set out by the convention as an asylum seeker, well, then surely you should be deported. Surely that is the way it works. That's the system. That's our immigration laws. Do you not accept that?
Okay, so right now we don't have a proper international protection system. If we had a proper international protection system, if you want to classify someone as an economic migrant, then process their case within 3 months and put them in a center or something. Like, for example, in some European countries, when your case is rejected, I think it's Denmark or Sweden, you're placed in a detention center to be deported. Okay, now if you're claiming that these claims are not legitimate, as we can see in a lot of newspaper reports that people are destroying their documents and these kind of stuff, then hire the staff instead of paying RMR millions of dollars. Hire staff, process these claims within 3 months. And if you find that their claims do not reach the criteria, then you can implement the deportation. But most of the time, you can't keep people 17 years, 2 years in direct provision and
No,
then deport
I
them.
think I no, I think we all accept that. But as long as we all accept too that those who are not or don't fit the criteria under the convention should be swiftly dealt with and swiftly deported, of course, because they are, as John rightly said, taking the place of somebody who's genuine. Now you mentioned, of course, you know, the false documents. And I have before me the figures here, say for the last 4 months in relation to false documents. And it seems a vast amount of people are coming to Ireland with either no documents, false document, or they class them as imposters. In other words, they're people who claim they're children who are not children. They claim they're minors and they're probably not minors or whatever it happens to be. Explain to me and our listeners why you think people do that. They get on a plane in whatever country or port it happens to be, and then they destroy the documentation on the plane and get off the plane again. It seems to be happening a lot. So why do you think that happens?
First of all, I don't know the nationalities of those persons that are supposedly destroying their documents. But as we have mentioned many times, it's not illegal to seek asylum. Okay, you don't need a document to seek asylum according to Geneva Convention again. And most of the time, these people might be in fear of their life. You know, let's say for example, they're coming from a regime like Afghanistan, where the Taliban is notorious. They don't want their identity getting back to the Taliban. They might use a false document, which is legal according to the convention, to enter Ireland. And the government has a right to process their case in a timely manner.
I
So it's
mean,
not how you
okay.
enter, it's if your case is processed in a timely manner.
John, do you accept that if people are destroying their documentation, which we're hearing a lot of in the news, that they're destroying it out of fear, i.e., they may be coming from places like Albania or Georgia and not Afghanistan, and they feel that if they don't, or if they provide the genuine documentation, they would be processed and sent home too quickly. So they do it out of fear. Would you accept that, John?
I would accept there are certainly cases where that happens. And but here's the thing. This is really important. Because in Ireland, Owen mentioned the Geneva Conventions, but in Ireland we have the 2004 Immigration Act, which regulates this under law and says that if you present at an Irish port of entry, either whether it be Rosslare Airport, Dublin Airport, Shannon, wherever it is, with no valid travel documents, then you have committed an indictable crime under Irish law, which is punishable by either a 3,000 euro fine and or 12 months in prison at the higher end.
And
So this is,
the airline also gets a fine too for allowing it to
yes,
happen.
this is a prima facie crime. And in the and I'm going to say in a moment, I think it should be a crime because if there are genuine cases, if you are fleeing the Taliban, then I think taking that chance when there's a crime in Ireland is something you might still be prepared to do. But the fact that it's not being enforced means that if you are, for example, from Georgia or Moldova and you just want a better life and you know that you're not going to be punished for destroying your documents, then there's no disincentive to doing that. So I would say, Niall, that if Irish politicians had any other law, let's imagine that there were speeding cases and we had 8,000 of them in the last year and one prosecution, that would be a national scandal that everyone would be calling on the Minister for Justice to resign for. We have had, in the case of this law with no documents, about 8,000 cases over the last 4 years and one prosecution. One person has been prosecuted for breaking the law. We are the only country in the world that I know of which actually rewards people for breaking the law. So you come here, you have broken the law, you have no documents. What does the government do? It says we are going to bring you into the asylum and protection application system. We're going to put you up somewhere for the next couple of months on the state's dime. And this is where I want to pivot back to agreeing with Owen. Because if you are here 6, 8, 10 months, 12 years, whatever it is on that system, then of course it's inhumane to deport you. The fact that we don't have, we've all these people coming in, and it is incredibly unfair both to legitimate migrants and to the actual population that people are living for so long in this system. We should have a dedicated border force that's well-resourced. We should have a dedicated court that processes these claims. We should cut down on the number of appeals, because at the moment you go refugee appeals tribunal, court, Supreme Court, European Court, that 12 years can just be the legal appeals. We should have a court like the Court of Appeals, which is one and done, that deals with these quickly and efficiently and gets people out of the country.
But I don't know. I don't think I would accept that.
Deserve asylum into the country.
Yeah.
Can I add a point about Georgia and Albania?
Before you do that, just address what John said. One and done. In other words, we should have a special court similar to the Special Criminal Court that deals directly just with this situation, that you go in there, you appeal your case, the judge decides yay or nay based on the evidence given to him, and if it's nay, you get deported. If it's yay, you get to stay. Would you accept that, Owen? That would be a quick and more efficient system, but that idea or that theory has been rejected by campaigners who obviously represent asylum seekers in Ireland on a regular basis. So would you accept that system?
Well, first of all, we represent asylum seekers as well. And how we get our decisions is by conference, you know. And one of the things about this case and the process and so on is that there is no system, there's no structure in this asylum system right now in Ireland. You know, I think in 2015, we passed the International Protection Act, and that is not being implemented in terms of the reception center that the act implemented.
No, but I don't want to go back over that. I'm asking you just a simple question. We're all in agreement that the system takes too long, and that if somebody's here 12 years waiting, of course the minister should allow them to stay at that stage. They've made a life here. So that needs to stop. We need to process people very quickly to be fair to people. There is an abundance of appeals to the criminal or the circuit court, then to the high court, then to the Supreme Court, then to the European Courts of Justice or whatever it happens to be. Numerous amounts of cases continue to go on like that. And very few people actually ever get to the end of the journey and they end up in direct provision for years. If we want to fast track the system and be fair to people, John is suggesting a special court that sits, that basically deals with the appeals. And if you get rejected, you're going home. If you don't get rejected and the judge sees enough evidence that you were genuine, well, then you get to stay. And the state supports you or helps you in whatever way possible. Would you agree with that system, which would be quicker?
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion that we have a special court. I think that is a good suggestion. Also, the legal aid has to be provided upon arrival. Now we have a case where there's no proper legal aid asylum seekers are getting when they come to Ireland. You know,
okay, let me deal with the next aspect, because I don't want to keep you gentlemen too long. The majority of Irish people, according to a Red Sea poll last week, and Red Sea, of course, is credible in this country, 75% of Irish people believe we have taken in too many refugees. I think a blind man on a galloping horse at this stage would realise that we have gone too far because we cannot handle what we've accepted. Would you accept, Owen, that we have taken too many refugees?
Well, taken is a term you can't put with the convention, because you can't put a limit on the number of refugees that comes to a country. You know, like, for example,
can put a limit on it. But if you don't, if you can't treat those people, and here we are today talking about treating people properly, if we don't have the resources, the services, the accommodation and the money to treat people properly, why would you allow people in? It's like having a gig in a big venue and letting too many people in the door, which becomes unsafe.
Yeah, but as a signatory to the convention, you can't just say you're closing your border. you must have a proper system to process the case in a timely manner, which Ireland is not doing. So it's not about taking refugees. You know, like 20 years ago in Kosovo, when the Kosovo war, we took maybe about 1,000 refugees. Now with the Ukrainian war, there's over 70,000 Ukrainians, which is different from the convention. We accept Ukrainians because of the EU directive, but international protection applicant, we can't just say, okay, no international protection applicant.
John, would you accept that the convention doesn't allow us, and this has been said by Micheál Martin already, he believes that we are not legally allowed to say, sorry, the door is closed, even though Leo Varadkar suggested it over a month ago.
It's a red herring. It's a red herring. And Owen is right, and Micheál Martin is right. The Geneva Conventions do not permit us to turn people away. But there is a difference between not turning people away and doing what this government has done. So, I mean, many of your listeners, I suspect now, will be familiar with Roderick O'Gorman's decision, his disgraceful decision to announce that international protection applicants in Ireland would get their own door accommodation within 6 months, and then to broadcast that on social media in, I think, 72 languages around the world and put money behind it to advertise it to people so that they could come here. And not only was that a pull factor, it was also a lie. So he's brought a load of people here in hope from around the world who've convinced them to come to Ireland so they'll get their own door and instead, they're living in a hotel in Clare where nobody wants them and there isn't a shop within 3 miles. So that's a disgrace, first of all. Secondly, we have just continuously created these pull factors for immigration, because a good asylum system, I think everyone would agree on this, a good asylum system would be one that says to a gay person in Afghanistan or a woman in Afghanistan under the Taliban where the penalty might be death, come here, you can live your best life. But we have an asylum system that very often seems to be saying to people in parts of the world that are second world, so they're not in any immediate danger in a country like Tunisia, for example, or Albania, as we mentioned, or
Georgia,
Moldova. They're just a little bit poorer. Come here, claim asylum, and you know, the worst thing that will happen is that you spend 2 or 3 years or maybe 12 years in an asylum system. But then there'll be lots of people who say, well, you're here so long anyway that you should just be allowed to stay and you'll eventually get a better life. That is not an asylum system. That is a system that has been set up to allow people. And by the way, I want to be very clear on this. I don't blame anybody for taking advantage of it. If I was in one of those countries and I wanted a better life, I would probably do the same. Lots of Irish people went to the United States and tried to do the same. There are lots of Irish people living illegally in the United States. I think they should be deported home too, by the way. But we as a country have to act in the best interests of the people already here and those who are in genuine need of asylum. And having a system that allows people to take advantage and actively draws them here into this life that the Roderick O'Gorman is telling them on the internet, they have their own house, then they get here and they end up in a shed in Longford. That is a disgrace. And on the basis of it alone, this government has no basis remaining in office. I actually agree with a lot of what Owen has said today, far more probably than your listeners might have expected. This system needs to be reformed. It needs to be faster for those who are in it, and it needs to be much harsher on those who are trying to take advantage of it. It needs to be faster. But none of that is
So I think we're all nearly in agreement, Owen, that it needs to be a better system. It needs to be a more rigorous system. It needs to be a more efficient system. But I think the one thing we're disagreeing on, and I think you and John will disagree on, that those who are not genuine, again, I know you don't like the word genuine or legitimate.
Not genuine.
But those who, but
those whose
don't,
applications have been rejected. Well, can we use those that term?
Yeah, I think that's okay. So those whose applications have been rejected need to go home or go back to wherever it is they came from. It doesn't necessarily mean back to their home country, but as far as the convention is concerned, back to whatever country they came from in the first place. In other words, we're seeing a lot of people at the moment coming from the United Kingdom for fear that they will be deported to Rwanda. So they're now coming to Ireland. So that's why we're seeing an increase. We're also seeing an increase, as John rightly pointed out, that the minister in so many languages and social media invited people here. So we've seen the numbers going drastically from 2,500 in 1 year to 13,000 the following year. I think that was in 2022, after those social media tweets were put out. So John is saying we're inviting people here, but for no specific reason. We should be inviting people here whose lives are in danger, or as John said, if they're gay in Afghanistan, or women, or people who are, you know, the victims of political persecution, but not, you know, everybody who wants a better life. That's not the way it works.
Yeah, but just to add, you know, I normally don't defend Minister Roderick O'Gorman because I think the Green Party.
I don't think anybody has defended. I don't think anybody's defended Minister Roderick
but
O'Gorman.
But just to make it clear, I don't think that tweet caused people to come to Ireland. If we look at when the Irish Provision was created in 1999, the large increase was because the UK changed their immigration policy. So now we have the same thing happening again. the UK has changed their immigration policy. So a lot of people are afraid because of Rwanda, and Ireland is the next closest spot. And again, the right to seek asylum is universal. You can change your mind and say you want to seek asylum in France. So it's because of the immigration policy in the UK now, and you're going to see those numbers are going to increase as
absolutely
the process comes closer.
Well, I think to quote, I spoke to Nigel Farage last week, and I'm sure he's not your friend. I spoke to Nigel Farage last week, and he said, unless the Irish government changes its policy, you ain't seen nothing yet. Because he's talked about numbers coming from across the Mediterranean and across the Channel have tripled in the last year and a half. So if those numbers have tripled into the UK, we are going to see a massive increase. So if we're looking at 20,000 now, we could be looking at 40,000 this time next year. So we need a better system, and we need to find out who actually needs our help and support and who doesn't and who's just here for a better life. Because, Owen, we can't be the answer to the world's problems. We're a small country economically and geographically. And I understand that, you know, the minister said, Simon Coveney said many years ago, Ireland could withstand a population of 10 million people. And there is no there's no doubt that we need people, particularly unskilled. And that's why they're talking about changing the visa criteria at the moment to work in hospitality, to work in retail, to work in all those things. And people should be allowed to work and do all those things. But we don't need a lot of people coming into Ireland who don't have the money to buy their own home and who will probably never have the money, because we see what property prices are like in this country. If you're on minimum wage, it's out of your reach, which will eventually just become a drain on the system. That's not what we need. We can support some people, but not everybody.
Again, we need a proper asylum system, you know, because like when we were campaigning, it was 10,000 was a lot of people for amnesty. And the government accepted 70,000 Ukrainians. So there is room for improvement, but the system must be improved, as John has been saying. You know, unless the system is approved, people will abuse it. So, and you can't blame those people for abusing it because they want a better life.
Well, no, I don't. And I've said on numerous occasions when I see protesters, you know, chanting out, 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 go home, I don't agree with that rhetoric, because your protest should be at the government's door, not at the door of the refugees.
Exactly.
Okay, but John, getting to the protests then, John, because I'm conscious of your time. Getting to the protests, do you accept people? Well, you do accept people's right to protest, of course. But the protesters, on numerous occasions, have been called right-wing racists or right-wing extremists. When we all know the majority of people who are protesting are people who are concerned, maybe misinformed as well, but concerned. There are some right-wing loonies in the middle of it all.
I think the tell on that, the reason it's nonsense to call them right-wing extremists in the main. I mean, I'm not disputing. There'll always be the one or two people who go to every protest in the country because this is their issue and they follow around. And maybe they are extreme on it. But that doesn't represent the vast majority of people at these protests. And I think the tell on it is that these people, the protests are very rarely about national immigration policy. They're nearly always about this place isn't suitable. It's nearly always, could you not find somewhere in Donegal for them or whatever. They're not on the face of it anti-immigration protests. And we haven't seen thus far any massive surge in the opinion polls for what one might term in inverted commas an anti-immigration party. I suspect if things continue the way they are, that will change. But for the moment, the Irish people have been remarkably tolerant. But on these protests, I think it is an awful lot. And there is hypocrisy out here. Because if you think back last year to the tragic murder of Aisling Murphy, when we had a national conversation, a national debate, one of those things we do so well in Ireland about how the dangers men pose to women and how women don't feel safe walking along their streets at night. Do you remember all that, Niall?
I remember all that.
And the way it can be threatening. And
the hashtag was "She only went for a walk." That was the hashtag.
She only went for a walk. How threatening it can be. And we had all the great and the good from Randall and Rath Mines on RTE television telling us how unsafe they sometimes felt walking down the street at night. And then we have situations where you take very small rural communities, close-knit communities, sometimes urban communities that are close-knit, and you insert 300 men, and there's nothing to do with their nationality, because if they were 300 white blokes from the United States living in a hotel by themselves with nothing else to do, I suspect some of the women in the area might feel unsafe as well. And yet those concerns are suddenly immediately dismissed as racist and bigoted and right-wing and all the rest of it. When just a year ago, when white Irish women said they were afraid of white Irish men, they were progressive feminists. And now when You have working class women saying they're afraid of large groups of men being moved into their area. They are dismissed as being racist bigots. This is a class issue. It is nothing to do with racism, bigotry, anything else. It is a group of people in Dublin, in the media and in the leafier middle classes, who really enjoy looking down on people with that don't share their views, okay, and really enjoy feeling morally superior, and really enjoy saying you're a racist, you're a bigot if you don't like the very same things we don't like. So yeah, it's nonsense.
Okay, so then finally, in relation to the protests, and I'm sure you've been watching them over particularly the last 8 or 9 weeks, they seem to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and they seem to be happening more often. What's your view on people protesting against the idea of, say, you know, and it is primarily men, Owen, I think we have to accept that are moved in, you know, at 1 o'clock in the morning in buses or whatever it is. What's your view on people, you know, campaigning and stopping these buses going into accommodation?
You know, all this protest, I think, is caused by Minister Roger Gorman's department being a failure, because there's no way that all these men arrive at the same time. Some women and children arrive as well. And they can make a composition when they're placed in asylum seekers and community by not just dumping men, you know. But again, they're not doing their job. In terms of from the community standpoint, I think people have a right to protest. But you have to know where to protest and how to protest and the language that you use to protest in order not to be associated with racists. Okay. And even if the community was to come to Dublin and protest at the minister's office, they will get the attention they need. Because you know the composition of the government now. One party needs votes in the next election.
When you say they should be protesting at the Dáil, I don't disagree with you inherently. But what they're protesting is because they don't want them in their community. And as John rightly pointed out, you know, we had a national debate about the safety of women. You have 300 guys coming into an area, middle-aged men coming into an area. It doesn't matter where they're from. They could be from Ireland, America, Afghanistan. It's irrelevant. Those women feel unsafe. That is their concerns. We can't deny their concerns. And they want to stop that from happening. So going to the Dáil is not going to stop it. But standing on the road in front of the accommodation might stop it.
Well, blocking traffic is not going to stop it. It's actually legal to set up a roadblock. You know, as I say, you have a right to protest, but in the right manner. And I think the government will listen. You know, this government needs vote. Any group of people protesting now, any issue, the government will listen. So it depends on how you protest in order not to be associated with racism. And I think
government are getting it very wrong, because, you know, up to last Sunday when the Red Sea poll came out, everybody was a right wing racist who decided to protest. Yet the Red Sea poll says 75% of people agreed there was too many refugees in Ireland, and 76% empathized and sympathized with those who were out protesting and understood their concerns. So the vast amount of people in Ireland, I'm not saying they support the protest, but they certainly understand why it's happening. Because I suppose it's not in their backyard. I mean, it's all well and good for me or somebody else in an ivory tower to sit there and go, oh, shame on you, you shouldn't be protesting. But as soon as it moves in next door to me, maybe I'll feel the same way as well. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, everyone is protest. But again, you have a right to protest, but you need to know the manner in which you protest. Look at, I think it was about 4 years ago, Skillet Star Hotel. The whole community came out and protest against that hotel, and no one was called racist. Because they used the right manner by getting the asylum seekers to say the accommodation was not suitable. And they protested together with the asylum seekers. And I think in Clare, if they would have done the same thing, no one would have said they're racist. If they would have gotten the asylum seekers that didn't want to stay there, it was unsuitable to protest and block the road, then no one would have been saying that they're racist. But if you're using certain jargon, like I was saying, like illegal refugees and all kind of propaganda terms that people use, then you might be associated with racists.
Do you accept their concerns? Do you accept when 300 men move into a small community or move into a community that women in particular in the area have concerns? Do you accept that?
Yeah, I do accept that it's wrong, because again, it's not 300 men came to Ireland in one go. There were women and children that came in the last 6 months. They could have done a better composition in that community. They could have sent some children. They could have sent some women as well. Why dump 300 men or whatever?
Okay, that's a fair point, John. When we see these, you know, busloads of middle-aged men arriving at an accommodation, it's normally because the women have been given priority and put into accommodation first. The men have been out in City West or whatever it is, you know, big place, and then all popped onto a bus at the same time and moved out. So it's not like those 300 men just arrived in the airport the night before. That's not the case.
I agree. No, there's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about that. I mean, this is all comes back.
But
to
that's the visual, isn't it? That's the visual, isn't it?
It's the visual because, I mean, I think it's also true to say that we have a disproportionate number of single men who apply for international protection. That is true. And that for me is always a bit of a red flag, because if you are fleeing oppression, then it really should be males, females and children equally, or perhaps even more women and children.
But I mean, I assume they come here with the hope of family reunification afterwards.
Yes, but if you were in fear of your life or of torture or of oppression, you might think an average man would want to get
there. Well, I wouldn't want to leave my wife behind, no, or my kids.
Anyway, that's a separate discussion. But Owen is right about the strategy here of dumping big groups of men. And I mean, oftentimes, by the way, women and children don't have it any easier either, because we had a situation in Kerry last month with a group of Ukrainian women and children who'd been living in an area, gotten jobs, kids into school, and then all of a sudden the department announced that they were all going to be moved after 18 months once they were settled 80 miles up the road to somewhere else, which was being told, oh, this is an asylum centre for women and children, whereas the one that had women and children in it, they were all going to have their lives turned upside down a second time so the department could shunt in a load of men. Because once it was approved as an asylum as an asylum location, they were able to, in their mind, do a little bit of a switcheroo. So yeah, it's so cynical. This is, I think, where Owen and I would agree most. It is so cynical. They treat people like pawns on a chessboard. It is literally, where can we put these people that will cause the least fuss? And the actual people who they're moving around like pawns, there's no long-term consideration for those people's future. They are going to go into a hotel in Inch or in Longford or in Ballyshannon in Donegal or in Achill Island and be forgotten about until maybe somebody in 5 years' time goes, hey, how long are these people going to be living here? And then they might think about it again. It is just to get to the next election with the minimum possible amount of damage. And one thing I agree with Owen on is that far too few of these protests are involving the people in this accommodation, because they are being... I don't want to be too much in agreement with Owen, but I'm in agreement with him on this. There are a lot of people in that system, and we've interviewed some of them on Grip Media, who are having a horrendous time in that accommodation, and they are willing to say it's unsuitable as well. And I think some of these communities should probably reach the hand out across the divide and say, look, we know this isn't suitable for you. You know this isn't suitable for you. Join with us. I think that's a very constructive point. Because I don't think the vast majority of people in Ireland are racist. That is not the case.
No, I don't believe that. And by the way,
75% of the population aren't.
I want to say finally on that note, when we saw what happened in Pierce Street 2 weeks ago, where somebody set fire to the tents, the video the night before was a load of protesters going over to the tents. One of the immigrants had come out of the tents, swung an iron bar at the protesters. The protesters beat him up. And when I looked at it, it was so sad. I felt sorry for everybody in that situation, for both the residents who were driven to that and this young man from wherever country he was from swinging an iron bar at people, because it's not their fault. It's the government's fault. It's bad policy that drives people against each other. And I think that's what's happening, that division in society. But just finally, before I wrap it up, it would be remiss of me to not ask you the question as to why the majority of people seeking international protection are coming from countries that are considered, on the tourism basis, as safe countries. Georgia, Albania are top of the list. And yet, these are countries you could go on holidays to tomorrow. And they're perfectly safe countries. They may not be very wealthy countries when it comes to the locals and the people who live there. Their economy mightn't be as good as Ireland per head of population. But there's nothing wrong with these countries. People's lives are not really in danger. So it would be remiss of me to ask, do you accept that it's wrong that we have people coming from countries which are not dangerous?
Okay, so again, the only reason you can seek asylum is not because there's war in your country or many other issues. Let's say, for example, Albania, for example, you know, police brutality is... it's crazy in that country. You know, a lot of people seek asylum because they're fear of their life because of police brutality. Georgia, for example.
You could argue the same about the United States, depending on the color of your skin, I suppose.
You had about 10 persons from the U.S. seek asylum in Ireland, I think, last year. One guy died 2 years ago from the U.S. in direct provision. So again, it's not where you're from.
Yeah, but there was a guy on Upfront on RTE last week from South Africa. And his reason for being seeking international protection in Ireland was he came here on a holiday, and his own words, he came here on a holiday, he liked it, so decided to stay.
Well, that's not a reason to seek asylum.
I couldn't agree with you more.
you know, again, the system does not permit for the case to be processed in 3 months, because if you put that on your questionnaire, you're not going to get asylum in any country. Okay, you have to prepare
so
a questionnaire.
So you agree that he should be rejected, put on a plane, and sent back to his home country.
No, I can't agree. The IPO needs to agree, you know. But
no, I'm asking you, Owen. Let's all be logical here, right? Because I think, you know, in fairness to John, he's agreed with a lot of what you said, and I agree with a lot of what you said, and you agreed with a lot of what he said. So let's be fair. A guy comes from South Africa on a holiday and says, "I like this country. It's great. I think I'll stay." And he applies to seek international protection. He's going to be rejected, as you rightly says, if he puts that down on his form. Do you believe he should be sent back to South Africa?
Well, if he's rejected, where is he going to go? You know,
come on. Oh, be fair. I mean, it's not, you can't have a free for all. It just can't be a free for all.
Exactly. You can't seek asylum because you want to vacate. You want to have a vacation.
Okay, so the one thing we will agree on, he should be sent home if his asylum is rejected.
You know, it's not a matter, his case should be processed. Okay. The IPO needs to decide when he leaves.
You agree that if his case is processed and they reject it on the grounds that he's just a holidaymaker who liked the country, you believe he should be sent home.
Yeah, holiday is not a reason to seek asylum.
And I'll just to wrap it up on this point, because I think that is an obvious and absurd case, but it comes back to what we were talking about at the very start of the conversation about deportation orders, because if his case is rejected, as it should be summarily on that basis, a deportation order will be issued and there is no agency of the state which will enforce it. So he can live here illegally, probably as long as he commits no crimes for the next 12 years, and then probably apply for an amnesty and stay. This is where the system is broken, and this is where it's undermining the confidence of the public. I just think if you're deported, I mean, if you get deportation order, the cops should march you to the plane, put you on it, and make sure and wave it goodbye as it takes off.
Well, that's what they do in most countries, and they usually have two guards on the plane or whatever it is to make sure they don't get back off it again. Anyway, listen, thank you very much indeed, John McGurk, Grip Media, and also Owen Chance, chairperson of the ADPI Abolish Direct Provision campaign. I appreciate both of you coming on the air today. Thank you very much indeed.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.